You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts. Industry associations and organizations are the backbone of our industry. They provide a place and a time for us all to get together and catch up with each other. They advocate and lobby on our behalf because we have more power when we get together as a group, and they also help us advance our industry and increase professionalism. In this episode, I interviewed Dan Ferguson, who's the Executive Officer of the Victoria and Tasmania branch of Parks and Leisure Australia, which is also known as PLA. We chat about why they exist as an organisation, how they can advocate on our behalf, and how they support those of us running a business that contracts to council, those of us working in the field, and those of us working behind a desk supporting people who are working in the field. We also chat about two of the events they're holding this year. Shout out to this episode's sponsor, Green Life Group, who are also known as GLG. They're a major sponsor of PLA, and they're paying for me to fly to the Joint Congress in Adelaide this year, which Dan and I will speak about shortly.
Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. It's always funny saying that with somebody with the same name.
It is. Yeah. I get Dan and Daniel, but I don't get Danny. Do you ever get Danny?
No Danny. I get, Dan, Daniel. I get Fergie as well.
Fergie.
Care of the last name. Yeah.
Yep. Classic. So we're here today. We're going to talk a little bit about Parks and Leisure Australia. Can you tell us, so what is this organisation and who do you serve?
Yeah. So I guess the easiest way of describing PLA, and you'll hear me say PLA a fair bit, so Parks and Leisure Australia, but we're essentially an industry association for professionals that work in, I guess, the sport, recreation, leisure, parks sectors across Australia. And I guess we like to run with the tagline, the people behind the places. So essentially we're all about, the planners, the architects, the builders, and the custodians of our parks, bushlands, gardens, sports facilities, leisure centres, trails, paths, water bodies. I could go on and on, but it's all about, the people that are behind those places. So who's keeping those places ticking, who's planning them, who's building them, who's making them available to the community. We're all about supporting those people. The easiest way I generally describe it to people and kind of what our membership base really is a very strong contingent of local government. So, throwing it out there, 80%, something like that, of our members would be local government. So it's all about councils and then anyone that serves councils. So as I said, whether it's architects or equipment suppliers or consultants, but it's anybody that services local government. And then local government staff themselves. That's our that's our people, so to speak, and who we look after.
So I've worked at GLG for a little while. I was team leader of a small depot. Yep. So I guess that would be somebody pretty much exactly like me. I'm working in parks and gardens, whether I'm a team leader, whether I'm on the tools, whether I'm a manager. These are the people who you serve.
100%. And GLG, they're actually a wonderful supporter of PLA, have been for a long time. They're a national sponsor of PLA at the moment. So they're a fantastic industry supporter. But besides that, they are the exact type of people that we are there and wanting to connect with and support our industry, both for local government staff, but then, as I said, that the companies and the organisations that are then supporting local government in providing those community services. So the likes of GLG are a great example of who our people are as well.
Mm-hmm. So just like the Australian Institute of Horticulture,
yep,
you're a not-for-profit, right?
Yeah, correct. So we're a not-for-profit organisation. Everything that we do is all about supporting our members, providing opportunities to our members. I can talk a little bit about some of the things we do in a little bit, but any income that comes in, it goes to then supporting what we do to provide back to our members.
Mm-hmm. And all of that's all public, so anyone can at least with the Australian Institute of Horticulture, we have meeting minutes and, it's all out in the open. Really, it is actually an altruistic thing. Those are rare in the world, but really this is something that's actually literally, people volunteer for these things just so that they can help the industry.
That's right. And look, you know, we're essentially PLA have, I guess, five regions. So yeah, Queensland, New South Wales, ACT, Vic Tas, South Australia, Northern Territory, and then WA. So I look after the Vic Tas region. So I'm the executive officer for Vic Tas. And so each region is supported by a volunteer regional council. So essentially a board. And they're all pure volunteers that come from industry. So for Vic Tas, as an example, we have 18, I think, at last count. We've got 10 region councillors and then 8 co-opted members, which are all industry professionals. So again, you know, local government staff, state government staff, consultants, equipment providers, all sorts, that literally volunteer their time to give back to the industry and provide the guidance for what PLA does as an organisation. What things are we doing? What are we running? What kind of events should we be doing? They volunteer their time completely to do that. So it's a big kudos. We're recording this during National Volunteer Week. So a big thank you to all of our volunteers as well for that help.
Totally. Definite shout out to all of the volunteers, whether you're working with PLA or whether you're volunteering for any other organization within our beautiful industry. Well done. But I just wanted to talk about some of those benefits that you're talking about, like what you're doing for your members. Let's start with, you guys have 2 events this year.
Yeah. Look, it's something that I was doing a little bit of research on PLA myself, just in you know, gathering some history myself about the organization. And we've been around since 1926. So we're coming up on 100 years in a couple of years' time. And throughout that kind of last 100 years, we've been essentially all about providing our members opportunities to learn, develop, engage with both other staff members across the industry, but within their own organizations as well. So we do a whole range of different things. Here in Vic Tas, we in particular run a lot of, industry events. So you'll see throughout the year, we run a professional development calendar, essentially an annual calendar, and each region does a similar thing, where we run things like sector on show seminars, where we get out and about, get onto whatever might be the newest development or something that's, works in progress, so to speak, and get everybody out on site, learn about that and learn from each other. We also run a leadership program every year. We do monthly industry talk webinars, so you know, free webinars for members, usually on a session, run it online, nice and easy to come along to. Again, learning about what's going on in the industry, who's doing what projects, you know, who's leading the charge. And we do some rec research sessions, which is a relatively new program, which we do that essentially to bring academia and industry together and get researchers in front of our members who may not always be able to access research. So they're some of our kind of ongoing things that we do. But I guess the standout events that we do annually are our conferences. So we do, each region does a region conference. So essentially each state does a conference. And then there's also our national conference that happens each year in October, usually October every year. So Vic Tas have one coming up in, where are we now? About three and a half weeks time. So just around the corner in June, from when we're recording. And then the national conference is coming up in October later this year.
So let's start with the local one here in Victoria. That's in a few weeks. By the time this episode goes out, it might be a little bit too late to start planning to attend, but can you tell us about what you guys are planning and what are the benefits of attending this particular event?
Yeah. And look, with this podcast coming out, it's the timing's probably not too bad because we are an absolute sellout, which is a fantastic thing to have. We weren't sure how numbers would be after the last couple of years with lockdowns and COVID and, budgets being tightened right across the industry. We can probably talk about that a little bit later on as well. So we weren't sure what numbers would look like, but we've completely sold out, so which is a fantastic thing. So our conference this year, we're heading to the Yarra Valley. So we're heading to Healesville in the Yarra Valley for a 2-day conference, and it's our 10th edition. So been doing 10 different annual conferences now, And we're focusing the conference on the road to recovery and resilience through parks and recreation. So this is off the back of, obviously, the worldwide pandemic that we all lived through, but also the recent floods and storms that have decimated Victoria, kind of the eastern seaboard. That's our focus, is the role that parks and recreation can play in that recovery process and the resilience going forward. So we've got quite a large program, actually, that's running through with that topic in mind. So we've got a little over 80 different speakers that are coming along and speaking at the conference across the 2 days. And that includes, again, you know, local government, industry consultants and suppliers. We've got state and federal government coming along and speaking as well, sports organizations, and academic researchers. So we really do kind of tick all the boxes of the different types of people you might want to hear from at something like this. So more than 80 speakers, about 65 different presentations and workshops. So there's about 12 hours worth of kind of content that we're doing across the 2 days. And we are kind of splitting it up into three streams, I guess you could say. So three kind of focus areas. So we've got parks and projects as one stream, places and spaces as another stream, and then policy and planning as another stream. And then we've got a whole bunch of kind of subtopics that fall into one of those topical areas. So quite a large program and a lot of learning to be done. And that's quite typical for our annual conference. So year on year, it's a relatively similar format that we run with, where we generally have 2 to 3 different topical sessions running at any time. So it's not just a come up and here's the program and you must listen to these people. There's options. So you come along to the conference and you can pick and choose which room you go to as part of that conference. So we try and do it as a bit of a pick your own adventure for people mm-hmm. that do come along.
It'll be a little bit like visiting some of those big music festivals where you have to choose one band over the other.
Exactly right. Which stage do you want to go to? Who do you want to hear? You know, how do you make those decisions? Who wins out? So very much so for those that have been to the music festivals.
Well, I'll be doing a talk on Hort people, so hopefully people turn up to that one too. So if you're listening, come and check me out.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
You make me feel not so special, though, when you say there's 80 other speakers or 79 others.
but there's all different. And as I said, we're trying to touch point on all the different types of people we could get involved. And I must say, your presentation in terms of what people and bringing that, the media side of things, as well as then the employment side of things crossing over, something we didn't have. So it's great to have you involved.
Good. Yeah. It's really good to have the focus on people. So people and places, I mean, this is the backbone of our horticulture industry, is the people. And I know that it's a cliche to say it, but it's absolutely true.
That's exactly right. And I mean that, you know, at its absolute core, that's why PLA exists, as we were kind of talking about earlier. You know, we're not a business that's out there trying to make money or provide something that somebody, you know, can buy, some kind of consumable good or something like that. We are there to service our people. So that's what it all boils down to. That's why we run the conferences. That's why we run the events, for these kind of learning and opportunities for our industry just to get together as well. So even setting aside all of the education and learning side of things, just the ability for people to get together is the other key thing that we love running these things for, the networking opportunities and some of the planned social activities alongside the conference are quite often the most well attended sessions of the conference proceedings.
Yes. I got to say, the networking is something that I really believe in, and I always tell listeners this. Just for example, at the AIH last year, I'd been connected with Jason Summers online, and you know, we talked to each other and we commented. But then having met him face to face and just shaking his hand, we didn't even talk for that long. It would have just been a few conversations scattered throughout the day. But now, I mean, we're actually almost becoming buddies. I mean, we talk a lot. He's on the council of the AIH with me now. I invited him on and we've done a podcast episode together. We're talking about some new stuff that we can do together. It's just that face-to-face networking actually can't be replaced, can it?
Exactly right. And look, you know, as much as we've all gotten used to the online world and you know, meeting online, attending webinars and things like that, it just doesn't compare with being able to get face-to-face involve with people and talk to people, as you're saying there. You might first meet somebody online, connect in, but having that, you know, being able to put a face to a name and have that person-to-person interaction, it's absolutely one of the most powerful things that we can do as PLA, is provide those opportunities for people to get together. And yeah, your connection with Jason is a great example there. He's been a long-term, I guess, involvement and supporter of PLA, has been for a long, long time. So it's great that he's now connecting in with you and with AIH as well, and creating those connections across associations as well.
Mm. So I think of Jason as being like a tall tree. You know, he's been in the industry for a long time. He's well established, no pun intended. But why is it, do you think, that so many of these so-called tall trees are attending these industry events? Like, what is it about these industry events that attracts the best of the best?
Look, I think it is that it's over time become the best of the best presenting and sharing work that then simultaneously makes the best of the best want to come and attend the session. So it's been a bit of an ongoing circle there, which is fantastic to have. But we also pride ourselves on trying to be quite diverse in our offerings of what we provide at the conference. And that's where I was saying that kind of a choose your own adventure process that we do. Let me tell you, behind the scenes, it's an absolute nightmare to coordinate that many speakers, that many sessions, and having, you know, three things on, at sometimes four things on at once that people can choose to go to. It is a nightmare to coordinate, but it's worth it in terms of providing those opportunities. And that's how we get such a diverse, offering. We could do just here's the program, here are the speakers, it's one room, it's one set of things that you can attend, but we feel that we kind of then are almost curating the content too much by doing that.
Mm.
Whereas we like to do it as an open call, who wants to come and share what they're doing, and then we put the program together around that. So I really like to spruik this year that we didn't actually turn anybody away in terms of speakers necessarily. We worked with a few people that put their hand up to say, look, I'd love to share what we're doing, wherever they're from, whatever their recent project was. I worked hard to be able to fit everybody in because we want to give everybody the opportunity to share what they're doing. So there's only a few that we had to, I guess, kind of workshop and mold a little bit to make it as pointy and pertinent to attendees as possible. But that's one of the things that I'm priding myself on, is that we've managed to get everybody who wanted to speak and present and share their great work into the program. And I think it's quite a good program that we've managed to come up with as part of that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So it's very inclusive. Something I think about finding information online is that it's really hard to find good sources. And I'm guessing that probably a lot of people in our industry feel the same way. Like, we look at social media and we see someone feeding their plants with orange juice, and we sort of put our head in our hands and we say, how do I, where do we find good information? And so it's events like this that we can actually find industry-relevant information that's been vetted by industry experts and professionals who have been doing the work for years.
That's right. And look, if there's nothing else that we achieve other than somebody who's been sitting there, whittling away at a project or an issue that's popped up, and they're racking their brain about how to fix it, that they come along to the conference and say, oh, that council's already answered that question. They've already done that project. Or, this organization's got a solution to that issue that we're feeling. And they walk away with that one little nugget that they can then go, great, I can go and work on this, in my back at my day-to-day, job. That's an absolute success for us. So if it's that opportunity just for them to know, hey, what are other people doing, kind of raise the eyes a little bit rather than getting stuck in the day-to-day mundane, we're the only ones dealing with this issue, or it's, why is it always us? Mm-hmm. Learning that, hey, we're an industry here of professionals that are all working in the same space, dealing with some of the same issues. Let's learn from each other. So if it's that one thing that can be taken away of just knowing that, hey, somebody else is doing the same thing that I'm dealing with, I'm going to go and connect with them now after this conference and learn from that process. That's a huge tick for us. So if all of our attendees can just have one of those moments, tick. It's a success in our eyes. The flip side, the other side to that as well, is the networking aspect. So if you can just connect in with, one other person that's in your space, tick. it's a success for us. You know, I've attended the PLA conferences right across the country, so each state and the national one for the past maybe 10 years or so. And that's been the biggest thing of just that, you know, that one connection that you might make at each conference. It's just been then, you know, 10 years worth of having somebody to bounce ideas off of. So,
absolutely. Yeah. These events, they are the backbone of our industry. Our industry would not be the same without these types of events. And, you know, everyone who's in our industry, like maybe you're an arboriculturist, but you work in parks and gardens. So you should still be attending, even if you're not, you don't consider yourself like a sports turf specialist or a parks and gardens operator. It's still for you if you're working in the built environment.
That's right. And I think the some of the greatest feedback that we get as part of these events that we run as well is again, that I guess people opening or being exposed to areas that they're not normally in. So as you're saying there, it might be somebody who is, you know, working through a street tree planting program as an example. And, you know, community consultation can always be a tricky component of that. But being able to learn from community consultation processes for something that's a completely different project, it might be, you know, the redevelopment of an aquatic center or a sports stadium or something like that. But that aspect of community consultation is what you can take away from those learnings. So it's not necessarily being a very, you know, it doesn't have to be specifically on your topical area, but those little nuggets of processes or those things that regardless of the specific area you might work in, there's some of these processes that we all need to go through that are very similar.
Couldn't agree more. It's a mistake to only focus on your niche. How much can a maintenance operator learn from the construction crew, or how much can, and vice versa, or how much can landscape architects learn from the maintenance crew? Like, really, we should all be getting together and teaching each other what we know, because there are giant gulfs of information gaps between us.
Yeah, 100%. And look, as much as we, you know, would all love to say, and I say this having worked in local government and state government myself for many years, as much as we like to say that we, you know, don't work in silos, it inevitably happens. I don't care what organization you work for, who it is, at what level, silos inevitably come up as we get stuck in our day to day. And so these kind of opportunities, to broaden things out and just go, hey, what's that other team doing? What's that other department doing? What's that other organization doing? I think are extremely powerful.
Couldn't agree more. So is there anything that we've neglected to talk about with regards to the Yarra conference?
Look, it's probably just I guess the key component of our conferences as well is that it really is a collective effort to make it happen. So I spoke about our program and the presenters that we have, and they're all, again, volunteering their time to do that. So, you know, more than 80 different speakers who are volunteering their time to come and share with the industry. So it's a big thank you to them for being able to make events like this happen. And then the other side of things is also our partners and our sponsors who, you know, without them, events like this couldn't happen. We cannot put on events without our sponsors who are there to support and ensure that, you know, the little things that people maybe don't think about when they attend conferences, you know, the lanyards, the name tags, the, you know, coffee, you know, providing a barista at the event and things like that, that, you know, our sponsors are the ones that enabled that to happen. And then vice versa, allow us to provide, you know, the opportunity to attend these events at as low a cost as we can. The sponsors are what enable us to do that. So, you know, trying to make it as inclusive as possible to everybody, we try to limit what the cost of a ticket would be, and we do that with thanks to our sponsors. So we have a big long list of sponsors as part of our conference who get involved for various things, as I said, whether it's, the coffee or the lanyards or, you know, the food, speaker gifts as well, things like that. That a big thank you to our sponsors. But just our ongoing PLA sponsors as well is a big, big thank you out to all of them. And I know Green Life Group, who are I believe, a sponsor of this podcast as well. Mm-hmm. And I know you've had some involvement with them in the past through your career, but they're one of those supporters of PLA and have been for a long time in terms of supporting the industry. So a huge big thank you to them. They're for our region conference, they're one of our gold sponsors, which is essentially the highest tier sponsor. So a huge big thank you to them. We'll talk about the national conference in October a little bit later, but GLG are one of the major sponsors for that one too. So if anything, a big thank you to sponsors like GLG for them giving back to industry as well. It's a big support for us being able to do what we do.
Absolutely. So Dan, we've touched on some of the general benefits of attending these types of conferences, and we've also talked about the Road to Recovery conference. Can you tell me about the Joint International Conference briefly?
Yeah. So it's essentially each year PLA nationally hold a national conference each year in October. Usually it goes around from state to state, from city to city. So example, last year it was actually here in Melbourne, which was great for us down here, being able to get along to it. But this year, it's between the 22nd and 26th of October this year, and it's being held in Adelaide. But it's not just any old national conference. It's actually the Joint International Congress, which is being held in partnership between PLA, but also World Urban Parks and Green Adelaide. So it's not just the usual PLA conference. It's bigger and better, and it's an international congress this time around. So a shout out to everybody out there who might be listening to this, to all of your listeners. If you're thinking of getting along to a conference, there's a fantastic opportunity there for you to, sell it internally, let's say, to get approvals to use some of your PD budget and whatnot to get along to it, because it is an international conference. It's not just a state conference. It's not just a national one. It's an international conference. Huge opportunity there, I think, to be able to make the case to get along. This year, we're running with the theme of sustainable places, people, and habitats, and very similar to how I was explaining the VICTAS conference that's coming up and the different streams and speakers. This international congress is going to be very similar. I imagine there's going to be more than three different streams to pick from, considering it is an international conference and the size of it. So there's going to be something on the program at any one time that attendees are going to want to go along to. So I couldn't be more excited about it myself. I'm 100% getting across to Adelaide and going. I think it's going to be one of the biggest and best conferences for our industry in a long time.
I'm excited. I'll be there too. Tell me why the World Congress? So, what's special about this year, and how often does that happen? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so look, it's the first time that I can recall myself of it being an international joint congress and being able to do it in partnership with World Urban Parks. I'm not certain how often the World Urban Parks conferences or congresses occur. I believe it's not every year. There's time frames in between when they run the world conferences. So I can't actually remember the exact time frames that it is. But being able to bring it here to Adelaide as part of that is huge. And that aspect, I think, of, again, being able to attend an event where, we here in Victoria for our upcoming conference are very, extremely ecstatic to have, interstate guests who are coming along and speaking at our conference, and, the likes of kind of Australian government departments coming along and speaking. That's a fantastic thing for our VICTAS members to go along and hear from. But then you look at this international congress in October, and you're going to be hearing from international speakers. So, people coming across talking about what they're doing in their home countries and what we can learn here in Australia from those international areas, I think is just going to be a fantastically huge opportunity. So I know that already locked in as part of that congress is you know, the likes of the CEO of Parks Canada, as an example. So, you know, what can we learn from Canada, what we do here in Australia? You know, there's a, I believe there's a global ambassador for WWF and what they're doing in that space. So they're the kinds of people that we're going to be able to hear from, which isn't an opportunity we always get for people to come down to Australia and speak. And so to have that mix of international but local content, it's just an exciting opportunity, if you ask me. I'll be going along as a delegate, as an attendee, you know, not necessarily as a, you know, involved in running the event, so to speak. I'm going to be there purely as an attendee because I'm so excited about the opportunities to learn. So,
yeah, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. That's really exciting. The way you put it, what can we learn from Canada, is so true, because they're doing things that are totally different here. We all have our own subcultures, don't we?
Exactly right. And look, it's the thing that I've noticed about any kind of international speakers in particular is at the heart of it, we're dealing with very similar issues, the same, you know, constraints, the same things pop up. It's just more often that they've got a different way of, you know, a different solution or a different way of answering those questions and those issues. That's the biggest learning. You know, at the core of things, we generally have some of the same issues. It's just how the response is applied is extremely different in different countries. And that's where we can learn some of the biggest things.
Yeah, I can't wait. That's going to be so great. So what have we neglected to talk about with regards to Parks and Leisure Australia so far, Dan?
Look, I think the range of things that we offer and do, as I was saying, in terms of the different events and learning opportunities, we've spoken about those and what we, I guess, what our bread and butter core focus is. But we also work in the space of I guess, advocacy and providing industry guidance as well. So, We do have a group called PLA Advisory who work in that space, and they're essentially tasked, again, complete volunteers. So, again, these are industry professionals that are giving up their time to do this on a volunteer basis. But they're there for kind of advocacy, and whether that might be things around the federal budget or, you know, what's happening with our industry in terms of, yeah, be it rising costs or workers or any of those kind of things that we're all experiencing, there's a role there that PLA plays around advocacy and what we can do in that space. So I guess it's just also a an open call, really, to anybody out there, anybody listening who wants to get involved with PLA, that if there are things that you're, you know, dealing with or ongoing issues, we are there as a sounding board and we're keen to hear about those. A, because it means we can do some advocacy work in that space, but also B, it helps us then determine what types of events and programs we should run in direct response to our members. Mm. So that's probably one of the key things that we're, you know, extremely focused on is, well, what do our members want? Let's not just keep doing what we've always done because we think it's right. Mm. You know, we do annual member surveys to go, hey, what is it that you want? What are the issues you're dealing with? What are the topics that are popping up? And how do you think PLA should respond to it? And then each, you know, nationally in each region then goes on and delivers directly based on that feedback. So that's probably just the other side of things that we haven't really touched on, is that advocacy side of things. And then the other thing that we're really, really investing a lot of time and effort into at the moment is our certification that we do have. So CPLP, Certified Practicing Leisure Professional is what it's called. And essentially that's a recognition of our members and their, I guess, their role and their profession as leisure professionals and whatever that may entail. So, you know, relatively similar to some other industry body, you know, recognition processes. So whether it might be somebody like, you know, say use the Australian Institute of Landscape Architects as an example, you know, you need to be a registered landscape architect to be a member of AILA. We don't have such a strict component around, you know, you need to be a registered X to be a member, but we're providing the certification now of being a leisure professional as an addition to members' professional development and opportunities for them to be recognised. So there's a whole kind of application and review process as part of that to be a certified professional in the space. So it's a form of recognition for those that are interested in that space as well. But yeah, beyond the training and events, which is our kind of core thing, they're some of the other spaces that we work hard in.
I want to ask you about both of those things that you brought up.
Yeah.
Just with the certified parks and leisure professional certification, to use a redundant word.
Yeah.
What's involved there? Like, because that's really interesting, because I think a lot of people who are working in parks and gardens are actually unqualified. So they're actually not being gatekept.
Yeah, exactly right. It's and what we often find across our industry as well is those that have come in at one area or one space, but then broadened out. And I think that's the great thing about our industry as well, is you can come in as, you know, an arborist as an example, and yeah, you work your way through and you end up as the, you know, the director of parks at a council as an example, and then you're no longer just looking after trees, it's you know, maintenance, it's sports grounds, it's all sorts. So you need to be able to broaden out that aspect of who you are and what you do. And so the CPLP is just one way that PLA are doing that in terms of providing an industry certification and kind of realistically a national benchmark. So to be able to say, oh, they're a CPLP, there's that recognition nationally for what that means. And so it's not, targeted to a specific area necessarily. It's just around, you know, do you have existing qualifications? What have you been doing in this space in terms of ongoing professional development? So that's a key component of the CPLP process is, hey, are you continually attending things? Are you continually learning? Are you coming to the conferences? Are you doing some training courses? We will recognize all of that effort that you're putting into continuing your development and then recognizing you as a certified parks and leisure professional. So that's the whole intent of it. Yeah. So it's not just, oh, I did a degree or I did a training course, you know, 10 years ago and that's where everything finished. This is now an opportunity to say, well, hey, no, you've been doing a lot of, you know, further education throughout your career. Why not have that recognized as part of this process?
I love that. So because you actually you ask these questions, it's not a participation award. So that's why that certification means something.
Yeah, that's right. And look, and it's something that, you know, it's a process that's, you know, there that you can apply to at any point in time that you want to, just in terms of, you know, when you've built up a certain amount of PD or experience in an area, and you can apply to be a certified parks and leisure professional. So it's a member-driven endeavor as well, but we're just wanting to provide that national benchmark is the easiest way of describing things, that can recognize that work that people put into themselves.
Love it. So let's go on to the advocacy now. Can you paint me a picture of how that works by using a specific example, please?
Yeah, look, it's probably one here in Vic Taz, ahead of the elections, whenever that was, feels like ages ago now. That long ago, to be honest. Yeah. it feels like forever ago. But as part of that here in Victoria, those state elections, we did an advocacy piece around the role that our industry plays, and particularly the role that councils and those that service the local government industry, the role that plays in providing, you know, spaces for the community. And the need for, you know, further investment in supporting that sector. And that ranged from, you know, just general call outs to the government around, additional funding for, things like facility redevelopments and, you know, the range of, I guess, funding programs, that state government do provide. And I think they've come a long way in doing that, particularly in some of the open space and parks funding in particular. But outside of that as well, there was just some advocacy around the role that PLA plays in that space. So being that we are for the members and providing services, you know, essentially by members for members, looking for additional support to do that through various, you know, whether it be funding or different streams. So that's some of the type of work that we do in the advocacy space in particular. But there'll be various other things that our PLA advisory group at a national level do as well. So, for instance, in your PLA gender equity charter that was put in place, I want to say 3-4 years ago now. You know, that's an example of something that PLA advisory have done. And there's other elements that they look at in that space as well around, well, what does our industry and our sector stand for? What should it stand for? And I guess, walking the walk, not just talking the talk in that space as well as an organization. So there's some of the types of things that we get involved in that space. And on top of that, we also like to, where we can, provide things like industry guidelines and similar types of documentation. So again, using VicTaz as an example, we have done a few of those over the years, things like the open space planning and design guidelines, which were put together quite a number of years ago now. They're due for review, so watch this space in that space. but that's an example. There was another one in terms of our outdoor fitness equipment, so guidelines around installing outdoor fitness equipment in parks. Design and planning guidelines around those is something that we did in partnership with the state government as an industry, advocacy and best practice, sharing of best practice process. So they're the types of things that we like to get involved in and try to provide some of that, I guess, support and guidance for the industry where we can.
So the support and guidance is awesome, but with the advocacy side of things, I just think I don't have a whole lot of power as Daniel Fuller, you know, host of the Plants Grow Here podcast and creator of the Hort People Job Board. But then suddenly if Parks and Leisure are calling government on my behalf, it really means a whole lot more.
Yeah, look, 100%. And, you know, that's something that we strive to be that collective voice for the industry and for our members. And in saying that, you know, recognizing as well that, you know, PLA doesn't necessarily have to be everything to everybody, but also looking at who our industry supporters and partners are in that space, particularly around advocacy. So, you know, the likes of Australian Institute of Horticulture or, the Australian Institute of Landscape Architects as an example other organisations that work in a similar space to us. What can we do collectively in that advocacy space is something that I'm definitely exploring. And that kind of partnership approach to things is something that you may have seen coming out of VicTaz of recent. We're doing some things with the Planning Institute of Australia, for example, in terms of opening up access to their training courses for our members and things like that. That aspect of, well, how can we be a collective voice for all and provide, you know, support and opportunities for everybody, regardless of what your specialty, you know, area might be. We're just about providing, you know, what is the greatest benefit to members. So, yeah, particularly that advocacy space, as you're saying, that aspect of being a collective voice, doing that as PLA, and then, you know, timesing our impact by, you know, a factor of whatever, by including other organisations in similar areas, we think there's real, real strong power in that.
I love that. So do I. And that's why I do volunteer on the council for the AIH. This is something we're talking about around the council all the time. Like, how can we represent our members? How can we collaborate with other industry organizations? How can we bring about the best results for our industry, whether they're members or not?
Yeah, exactly right. And that's something that we're trying to do, and in VicTaz in particular, we're stepping into some of these kind of partnership offerings that we're doing with other organisations at the moment to I guess, test the waters and see the response from members. And, you know, I dare say there'll be a lot more of those kind of partnership opportunities, because it just makes sense. Where you know, two organizations are looking at doing similar things, why not team up and provide that service to as many members as you possibly can? And it may be something that, you know, PLA may not have otherwise done or run directly themselves. So then how can we, you know, broker access to that for our members, even if we're not going to provide it directly? That's the, I guess, the kind of the partnership headspace that I'm in particular, of just, yeah, trying to diversify our offerings to our members as much as possible.
Me too. I couldn't agree more. If anyone's listening to this and this is resonating with you, Dan, you and I will go away and we'll talk separately. But please, anyone listening who is wants to get on board with the AIH particularly, please send me an email to daniel@aih.org.au and I'll have a chat with you and forward it to the right people who can start a conversation.
Yeah, and look, it's a very similar call out there to anyone that's interested in PLA and what we're doing. Yeah, you can get a hold of me at victaz@parksleisure.com.au. But more broadly as well, if you are, you know, from a council in particular, if you're out there listening to this and you work for a local council, I can almost guarantee that your council is a member of PLA. We have a very wide coverage. So if you're not involved in PLA already, reach out. Our touch points are usually either the parks or the recreation department. So if you're not involved in PLA, I can guarantee your council would be if you work at a council. Maybe just have to reach out to one of the other departments who may be the lead contact. And then any other organizations out there that are listening in, if you are, providing services to local government or involved in the council world in any way, PLA are really attempting to grow and create that industry around local government. So an open call out there as well.
Love it. So Dan, at the end of every episode, I always like to ask guests one final question. It's up to you whether or not it's on topic. So you can talk about what you did on the weekend if you really want to. But is there anything else you want the listeners to know about?
Anything else for listeners to talk about? I guess I'm just trying to think through here in terms of, you know, the opportunities that exist across our industry, I think are fantastic. And we kind of touched on that a little bit, but just that the aspect of getting involved in one area and the opportunity to then broaden out across so many different areas in our industry, I think that's what makes it so amazing. And so I would just recommend to everybody, you know, raise your eyes a little bit and have a think out there around, is there something else I could, mm-hmm. you know, I might want to get involved in, or is there something else I want to try out? Because you never know where it might go. That's all I want to say in terms of, anything else. I think we have a very supportive industry. So if there's something else you wanted to try a hand at, jump up and do it. I've seen many start in one area and go across, you know, 5-6 different specialties.
So true.
That's what our industry does best, I think, is supports its own. So that's just a general call out to everybody, I guess.
You never know which like conversation or which decision's going to be the one that really changes your life. And I think a lot of people are ready to make that decision to change. They're like, okay, so I've been in this role for 10 years now. I'm not really learning anything new, so every day is the same. And some people love to live like that, and no shade against you if you love to live like that. But someone like me, I need to go into the next horizon. And something I've learned over my life is that not making a decision is also making a decision. So sometimes you really do just need to bite the bullet and just be like, okay, so I need to apply for a new job that I've never done. Maybe I need to go down a rung in a new industry, or maybe it's time I go up a rung in my current industry.
Exactly right. And I think, there's a piece of advice that's kind of stuck with me throughout my career in particular. It's just to always say yes. So even if you don't think you have the expertise in that, or, you know, there's a project at work that's popped up that someone said, hey, can you get involved in this or do this? Just default to yes. Mm. You can learn on the go. You can, you know, that's how you get your experiences and broaden it out there. You know, I started out thinking I was going to work in pro sport, you know, as a young kid who loved sport, I was going to work in professional sport, or I wanted to be an athlete to start with, but that never quite eventuated. So, you know, what's next best? I'll go work in pro sport. That didn't quite work out. And then it was, well, who's providing these facilities I play at every weekend? Oh, local councils. There's a whole industry here. And yeah, and that's just gone from one thing to another, from local government to state government, and hey, now I'm, you know, the EO of PLA, but also, you know, doing a PhD, gone back to study as an academic. So, you know, not something I envisioned when I started out my career all those years ago, you know, fresh out of university at the time. But, you know, here I am back at university now as an academic. Not something I ever thought I'd do, but just saying yes to everything, it's ended up that way.
Yeah, so true. And you never know which conversation, like you probably don't even remember which conversations or where you heard people saying things that have led you down this path. But these things happen over a career, they sort of consistently happen. And the more times you say yes, the more of those you get. And so the more times you say yes, the more ladder rungs you climb up. The further you go, you might end up learning enough that you get sent to these conferences to be the speaker. So you're no longer just in the audience. But then you start learning enough to be a speaker. And that's very rewarding when people are listening to what you say, because you actually have something of worth.
Exactly right. And don't be surprised if you get a cold call email that comes from me saying, hey, we've heard you've been doing some really cool stuff. Do you want to come and talk at the conference?
Yeah, totally. It's good for the ego when that happens, for sure. Thank you so much for a great chat, Dan. I really appreciate your time, mate.
No, thank you, Daniel. It's been fantastic to explore this area. And as I mentioned at the start, this is my first ever podcast. So as I said before, I defaulted to yes. Hopefully it works out okay.
Well, recently somebody on the podcast had a very good business opportunity because they were working in a relatively small but up-and-coming company in a particular sector of horticulture. And then one of the really big companies reached out and said, hey, let's work together. So it was really good for her and her company, and it made her look awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And look, and that's what I think these kind of opportunities do. So, you know, we talk about the conferences and events, but these types of things, podcasts and just connecting and sharing information online, whether people are on LinkedIn or whatever it might be, you never know who is watching, who's listening, who's involved, and where that next connection might be. So, yeah, we try to facilitate it at PLA, any opportunity to spread information and spread, you know, share learnings of what people are doing. But I encourage everybody out there just to keep doing it yourself as well.
That's it. And connect with both Dan and I on LinkedIn. There'll be links in the show notes.
Yes, most definitely. I'm a little too active on there, so you might get sick of me.
So am I, actually. Yeah. I try to be, but it's important to be. I actually really believe in social media. It's great for consumption, but for in terms of content creation, that's really where the value is, I believe.
Yeah, most definitely.
Thanks again, mate.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
If you're in parks and gardens, sports turf, council landscape architecture, or a related sector of the public landscape and you aren't a member of PLA yet, maybe it's time you signed up. Don't worry, you won't have to hand in your AIH or Landscaping Victoria membership. The most connected people at industry are a part of multiple associations. Thanks again to GLG, who have been incredibly supportive of my projects and are paying my way to the Congress in Adelaide in October. If you'll be there, make sure you come along and check me out. If you're looking for a career change into parks and gardens, check out GLG on hortpeople.com. There will be links in the show notes for you.